excuse me for my voice, but I have never, never seen anything like it. On the road again.
If we wanted to hit mailboxes, we could let Ralph drive. We're the best
of friends. Moron, your bus is leaving.
Welcome to this Arizona edition of the On the Road Home podcast. This is Ken Crawford reporting to you on the road home from the Arizona game on November 14th. Hopefully my voice is going to hold in for this one. I came down with a pretty bad fever last night, and I didn't think I was going to make it to the game. And both of my older boys were coughing. My wife wasn't feeling that good either. And so it's kind of going to be a take-it-off weekend. And probably if the game had actually been on DirecTV on Versus, in that feud between them and DirecTV wasn't going on, I probably would have stayed home, but I just couldn't stand the idea of watching some stream on my computer when I could go down. So I took all the medications I could think of to help me feel better and got in the car. And I promised myself I wasn't going to yell because my throat's the number one thing that's killing me, as much as I'm sure the Bears could use my voice. And I know that I'm one of the more strong voices in my section and get everybody rallied up. I wasn't going to do it. And that lasted until 4th and 17 with a minute and a half left in the 4th. I figured it was going to be one play and, you know, I could just feel good about having, you know, help done my little part for that moment. Well, as it turns out, the Bear defense needed our voices again just a few moments later, and I couldn't stop myself once I started. So I apologize for my voice in advance as I go into this. So before I get rolling, a quick recap of the game. The Bears actually started out with pretty good offensive rhythm, scoring two field goals, including a 46-yarder, I believe it was, from Tavecchio. But you could get this feeling that they weren't finishing the drives, and the fact that they were up 6-0 after dominating the first quarter was troublesome. And sure enough, Arizona scored a touchdown to take a 7-6 lead, and then another field goal to take a 10-6 lead. And then right before halftime, in less than a minute, if I remember correctly, the Bears marched down the field and got Tavecchio another long field goal attempt, this from 47, if I'm remembering correctly, and he took us into the locker room with some momentum and only down 1 point. It was pretty much a stalemate for most of the third quarter, and Riley threw a couple interceptions that didn't help Cal's cause, but he delivered late in the third quarter with a long touchdown pass to Skylar Curran in the corner, our tight end who's only starting because we have had two tight ends go down for effectively the rest of the season. But he came up with a big catch despite the defender hanging all over him and drawing the pass interference call and got the touchdown. The Bears tried for two to go up 17-10, but failed to convert, leaving them at 15-10. Later in the game, Arizona managed to march down the field all too easily in that instance. The Bears have been pretty strong for most of the game with their defense, but in that particular drive, Arizona was clicking. And they went up 16-15 after failing themselves to convert on a two-point conversion. On the immediately following drive, the Bears took 8 minutes marching down the field to score a field goal of their own to give them the 18-16 lead, a score you will rarely see in football. And actually, Arizona managed to march the ball most of the way down the field and was in field goal range, although marginally so, when on third down, the quarterback threw the ball, it was batted right back to him, and he took it again, and he didn't realize that he couldn't throw the ball again. So when he threw it, he incurred a loss of down penalty and 15 yards. And that took them out of field goal range, setting up a key 4th and 17, which the Bears stopped, seemingly putting away the game with about a minute 20 left. Shane Vereen had other ideas for that ending the scoring, running through a gaping hole as Arizona tried to stop the Bears' run game at the line of scrimmage. And he went untouched on a 61-yard run into the end zone. Unfortunately, Manchin botched the extra point hold, which was a little high, I think. I don't think the snap was great, but it was manageable. And that left the Bears with only an 8-point lead at 24-16. That meant the defense had to come out into the field one more time, and yet again, they shut down Arizona, getting a sack on yet another fourth down. And so the Bears win 24-16. And in the end, how can't you be happy about a game like this? I knew Arizona wasn't as good as their ranking or as their record. As I've kind of said previously, their two big wins were Oregon State on the road, but that was in late September, and we all know how the Beavers have remarkably slow starts, and over Stanford in Arizona, and we all know that Stanford, at least before this Saturday, has struggled on the road, and Arizona has done particularly well at home. So I thought there was at least a hope that the Bears would be competitive today, and I think that showed through. And it's not because the Bears played that incredibly today, but because Arizona is not as good as people were thinking. And I think we're going to see that when they play Oregon and USC in the next 3 weeks. They'll probably beat Arizona State in between those two games. But I think the unit that was really impressive today was the Cal defense. And they started the game in a way that was troublesome to me. They didn't, because I really thought the key to beating Arizona was going to be press coverage. Get your corners and your safeties up on the line of scrimmage and beat their quick passes off the line. And although Cal did more of that today than they usually do, I think that what was really the key to success is that they weren't consistent. They used press coverage sometimes. They used soft coverage other times. They'd show press coverage, then back out of it. They'd show soft coverage, then jump into press coverage. And they were doing a lot to mix it up and keep Foles on his toes, who we have to remember is a freshman quarterback. This is his first year playing. So as much as I was originally disappointed to see them not go straight into the press coverage, I think it actually worked out very well because it kept Arizona on their heels as far as reading the Cal defense. And those big plays that Arizona would get was when Cal would guess wrong, when they would guess press coverage and they'd get beat on it. Because Arizona does have enough diversity that if you play press coverage on them all the time, you will get beat. But, I mean, the defensive line got 3 sacks. Now, 2 of those were very late in the game and hard to, you know, add them to the mix of saying Arizona's only given up 4 all season, they give 3 this game. Well, part of that was the desperation of the moment. But still, that showed them getting defensive pressure that they weren't getting before, and guess what? They got a sack earlier in the game, and for a team that was only giving up a sack every other game, to see the Cal defense getting pressure and sacks is a very good sign. And I think someone lit a fire under them, and they were playing a lot better and with a lot more intensity than they had been in previous weeks. The secondary did a pretty good job, in my opinion. Not great. One of their big weaknesses, I feel, is they don't really get certain aspects of the zone coverage. There are times when you see a safety who's sitting in a certain zone, and they're not cheating off over enough to the receiver who's in that zone to make it so that a completion can't be made to that receiver. They're just sitting in the center of their zone, which isn't good enough. You have to be doing more than that. And the few times that they got beat deep, that seemed to be a significant component of people were sticking too purely to their zones and not being willing to adjust their zones to how the Arizona runners were running through them. But overall, it was a great defensive game plan. Wonderful to see that out of the Bears. There are those who really criticize Gregory. And, I mean, he's not perfect. But personally, I think he's the least of the Bears' problems these days. And more important, or just as importantly, is that he's willing to keep evolving and trying new things and working on new things, and he's always making new moves these days to make the team better. And sure, there's going to be some failed experiments in that, but I feel like he's going to keep evolving to make this defense better as time goes on. And he's working with a group that's far more hobbled this year than people want to admit. Now, on offense, things aren't so pretty, and I think everyone recognizes that it was the defense that won this game by keeping Arizona from scoring, that the offense really did not perform all that well. At a minimum, Riley's interceptions were very troubling. Each one of them was not that horrible when you look at it individually, but they still hurt, and you still need to be avoiding them. And there were a couple of times where he was getting happy feet because you could tell he was used to being under so much pressure, when in reality the pocket was in great shape and he could hold in there longer. There were other times where the pocket was collapsing and he didn't recognize it, and he didn't get rid of the ball when his timer in his head should have popped. And so some of this is really hard to just, you know, say he needs to be better at this, because the reality is he's been put in a very tough situation by bad pass protection. But he's really not doing well enough to succeed given the limitations that he has. The offensive line started off run blocking pretty well. In fact, that was the key to the first quarter. But as the game wore on, they got worse and worse. And until that big hole they opened up at the end of the fourth quarter, they really weren't getting the job done for the running game. And I still think this offensive line is 10 times worse than anybody realizes, and 20 times more part of the problem than people want to admit. I mean, really, if we had a great offensive line this year, I think Riley would be doing very well. I think the run game would be outstanding. I think these receivers would be finding ways to get open, knowing that they had all kinds of time. I think this offense would be firing on all cylinders. And instead, we have a below-mediocre offensive line, and it's really hurt the team. One of the things I really liked today were the receivers. They went up and got the ball. They always came down with the ball. There were no drop balls. They got hit, and they made the catch. They got molested by the defensive backs on the other side of the ball, and they still came down with the catch. They did great today. I really thought this may have been one of their best performances. And Vereen impressed me with his ability to run between the tackles. Javid Best is really not that great between the tackles. I mean, he does okay. It's not that he's horrible, but it's not his strength. His strength is around the outside and in the open field. And when he has to navigate between the tackles, he doesn't have that right balance of knowing when to punch it through the hole and when to be patient. And I think Vereen actually has that instinct far better than Best does. And he did a good job of knowing when to just ram his head into the back of his offensive lineman and knowing when to wait for a hole or change directions. And boy, was he slippery. There was a number of times you thought he was pulled down and he evaded tacklers and either got a couple yards, or there was that one big one where he turned what looked like an 8 to 10 yard loss into a 10 to 15 yard gain. So I was very impressed with him. But again, the offensive line is not helping, and Riley may have had a lot of mistakes today. So that's disappointing. In the kicking game, how can he not be happy with Giorgio Tavecchio? He missed one, but it was from 47, something like that. It was from a very long range. And when you make two from that distance, you're allowed to miss one. And then he made all the shorter ones. He had four field goals today, two very long, two in the not gimmies, but you should make them range. And he made all but the third long one. So you got to give credit to him. He had a great game. His kickoffs are slowly getting better. He seems to get better these days as the game wears on, as he gets more comfortable. I mean, he had the one at the end of the game there. He got it all the way down to the 2-yard line. I mean, what was that? That was a great kick. And I knew that's what he's been capable of all along, but he did it finally. And he had two or three kicks before that down to the 5. But then he started the game off with a lot of balls. between the 10 and the 15. So that's still mediocre, but what's even worse there is still the kick coverage is allowing big holes. They're not breaking up the wedge. They're allowing them to develop a lane. And yeah, they're not allowing them to get outside the 40, but still, it's way too close to breaking it free. I mean, they actually came one kicker's leg away from not tripping him up en route to a touchdown, and it's just really not good coverage at all. So that continues to be very disappointing. It's not just that Tavecchio isn't kicking it long. They're not doing a very good job, because that was on the one that made it to the two-yard line. So very disappointing to see that still falling apart. I'm also feeling like we have a blocked punt somewhere in our future. There have been way too many people who've got way too close to anger. He's been doing a pretty good job of getting rid of the ball, but it hasn't been pretty. And so there's this just lineage of things that, despite the defense playing so well, the rest of the team is not doing that good of a job to do their part. And guess what? It's pretty much how it's been in all of the losses. Even the loss to Oregon that started getting out of hand. You got the feeling that was because the defense was on the field so dang much. And they did a pretty good job of holding their own, at least through the last couple minutes before halftime. And again, with USC, they were kept getting the Bears back the ball and keeping the score close, and the offense just wasn't getting it done. And yet again, you know, the score in the Oregon State game, you know, again, they got up to 31, but that included a kind of a garbage time touchdown at the end. So for the most part, you feel like the defense getting the job done is to at least keep the game competitive, to at least keep it to where if the offense were to get something going, they could make it close. But the offense isn't getting something going, and that's why we end up with these blowout losses. And I want to reiterate that point. I think what is distressing people is not that the Bears have lost three. It's the way they've lost those three. It's 42-3, 30-3, 31-14. That's the problem. If those scores were, I don't know, 31-28, 28-24, and 28-31, yeah, there'd be people who are disappointed, but the level of angst that we're seeing would not be there. Because the team is still 7-3. And in the big picture, you know, if you had to guess, they're looking at an 8-4 season with a win at Washington. And with the way Stanford's playing, it's hard to imagine them winning that game. So 8-4. And then a bowl win for 9-4. That's just as good as last season, folks. But the attitude will be entirely different than last season, where the feeling was we had a scrappy team that did the best with what they had, because of those blowout losses. Another thing I'd like to talk about is a realization I had during the game, or better said, a confirmation that I've had of a feeling I've had. I looked at how full the stadium was when the game started. I looked at the alumni side, and I saw a 75% full section, with the main donor section being completely jam-packed. I looked over at the student side, and I saw whole sections empty and very few people there. Now, that kind of filled up as the game went on, but the point I'd like to make is all of these people out there who are saying the alumni aren't carrying their weight are probably the same people who aren't showing up for this game. Because you know what? These alumni who've been around for a long time, they've been through the Holmo years, they've been through the Gilbertson years, they've been through the Cap years, they've been through them all. They keep showing up no matter what happens on the field. And all of these people who complain about those alumni not caring are the first ones to run for the hills when the team stops doing well. And of course, there are the diehard students who are coming out and carrying their weight. But I want people to remember that these alumni are the most dedicated people out there. These are the people that are still buying those ungodly expensive ESP seats, despite the fact that the Bears have kind of been on a lull lately, because they care about the program more than their money. And it always angers me, and I know Jason will agree with me, to hear these young students and young alumni who were not around for the rough years to complain about these alumni who have been here for through thick and thin and will continue to be here through thick and thin no matter what happens. And games like today prove it. They were all there in their seats ready to rumble before game time. And only a third of the students were there ready to rumble. If that, it might have even been less than a third. It was very empty on that side of the field when the game started. Even the main one huge section was only two-thirds full. And then the sections that go behind the band and the one next to that were completely empty, not a single soul in them. So, just a reminder, before people insult and debase the most diehard fans there because they're 75 years old and they're not going to yell and scream for 3.5 hours because their lungs just can't anymore. We need to remember who's there week in, week out supporting our team. They always clap for our Bears. They always put up the money to donate to our university. They're the heart and soul. In reality, the students come and go. Okay, so on a less derogatory note, let's look at the remaining games. Obviously, Stanford is on a roll. They are clicking right now in ways that's just unimaginable. That bye week for them before the Oregon game, they must have done something, eaten all of their spinach, I don't know what, but they have ripped through, and ripped through is the right answer. Put up 50 points 2 weeks in a row on supposedly two of the best defenses in the conference. Two teams that everyone fully expected them to lose to, myself included. I'm not, you know, saying I'm any better than anybody else. You know, this morning when people were saying, I can't believe Stanford fans are thinking they still have a shot at the Rose Bowl, I giggled myself. Well, guess what? We now have a two-loss Arizona team. All they need is a two-loss Oregon team, and they're right in the mix. And the tiebreakers make things interesting. You know, they lost to Arizona, and they beat Oregon. And then there's Oregon State, who's, unless something unusual happened to them this evening, is also a two-loss team, who they lost to. So they may not win the tiebreakers, but they're right in the hunt, and call me shocked. I'm very surprised. But what I will not be surprised with is if the Bears just get destroyed next weekend, because the big problem the Bears have, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, is they can't control the line of scrimmage, and Stanford wins games by winning on the line of scrimmage. Now, for them, their big thing is they win on the offensive line of the ball, and I think the Bears have some hope of slowing them down, although the way they've destroyed two teams that are very good defenses, I don't have a ton of confidence. But the way the Bears corral teams might work out well for them. But I don't think the Cal offense is going to be able to be that successful. Even though the Stanford defensive line isn't their strong line, it's strong enough that I'm really not optimistic about the Bears both holding Stanford to a low enough total for their offense to stay in it and for their offense to get just about anything going. So I'm pretty pessimistic about their chances on Saturday. I will be there in row B. Unfortunately, I don't know why I keep getting stuck with these really horrible seats in Stanford Stadium, cheering my Bears on, but I'm not particularly optimistic. But then I am very optimistic about their chances against Washington. They can definitely beat that team. And an 8-4 season, although not quite what we were hoping for this year, is not the desperate, horrible situation that people were fearing after that loss to, well, after all the losses, the loss to Oregon, the loss to USC, the loss to Oregon State. Now, bowl-wise, it'll be very interesting to see how things work out, because if you take my prediction for how the Bears finish out the season, they'll be 5-4 in conference, which isn't great, it isn't horrible, but it also probably doesn't sit them very well against the other teams that are bowl-eligible, because they're all kind of hovering above us. So, particularly with USC losing and them being a three-loss team and very likely not getting to a BCS bowl game, in fact, I'd say it's almost assured now, you've very recently got Oregon, Oregon State, Stanford, USC, and Arizona all in front of the Bears. And that puts us at the sixth bowl. And the bowl arrangements, as we go without two BCS bowls, goes Rose first, Holiday second, Sun third, Vegas and Emerald fourth and fifth, and then Poinsettia sixth. So it's a very strong likelihood we're going to be playing in San Diego before Christmas, and just something to keep in your mind. So obviously if we bump up to the Emerald, we'd be playing in San Francisco the day after Christmas. You bump up then to the Vegas, you're talking about Vegas again before Christmas, and then the Sun and Holiday are not long before New Year's. So just an interesting thing to consider. I don't have all the standings right in front of me, but there's a good chance we're going to end up on the bottom of that heap. But maybe not. I mean, it's hard to see how things will shake out. Maybe there'll be some other teams with four conference losses, and the Bears draw very well, so there's a good chance that, given the choice, somebody like the Vegas might take the Bears when otherwise they wouldn't. So, we'll see. Final kind of notes before I wrap things up. The Bears finished yet another season where the only teams they ever lose to at home are USC and Oregon State. We can now say we've had six seasons where we alternate between going undefeated in the even years and losing two at home to Oregon State and USC. And I think the real good thing about this year compared to, like, say, 2007 is that the Bears are winning on the road. Right now they are 3-1 on the road. If they finish out the way I predict, they will be 4-2 on the road and 4-2 at home. So hard to argue with that from a consistency standpoint. And I think that's going to mostly wrap things up. One final set of props to our defense for really getting it done today. I heard they held Arizona to well under 300 yards, something, I think it was the 270s total yardage, which is remarkable for a team that's averaging close to 450 a game. Obviously, those 16 points are well below their season average in the 32 range, and I think they were the key to this game. They kept getting the offense the ball, and they played with intensity. They didn't give up. They were really the heart and soul of this team today. And if the Bears have any hope of winning next week, they're going to have to redouble their efforts and do even better. So that's going to wrap things up. Hope to have the Excuse Me for My Voice podcast midweek with Jason. I'm doubtful that there will be one for Bear Territory because I don't think I'm going to be able to make it down for the big game press conference. It's on Monday, and unfortunately that doesn't work well for me. But you will, of course, get another On the Road Home podcast after the big game next week. So stay tuned for those, and thank you for listening. On the road again.